Hi, I'm the Dark Tangent, and you're about to listen to some speeches from DEFCON 2, held at the Sahara Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, 1994, July 22nd to the 24th. This speech and all speeches are copywritten, the Dark Tangent and DEFCON Communications, all rights reserved, except permission is granted for educational nonprofit use. Now, the Sahara, like most other hotels DEFCON's been at, has since been blown up to make way for a bigger and better hotel. So with that in mind, sit back, relax, get ready for some good speeches.
All right, Judy is moderating, and your panel keeps changing, so I'm not sure who...
No, there's two more of
them. Who's missing?
Karen and Marianne.
Karen and Marianne, if you're out there...
Please come forward.
Please come forward.
Oh, is that mic live? Let me make that live.
John, turn your video off now. Karen and Marianne. John, please turn your video off. Thank you. Karen and Marianne, are you here? Hey Karen, hey Marianne, are you out there?
Well, maybe we'll have you on the
Karen!
What do you want to do?
They're here.
Yeah.
All of it. Because two of us don't want to be recorded. It doesn't matter, just don't do it. Karen, Marianne! We don't have any releases or permission, John. I can't speak for them.
What's that? Do you want me to make an announcement of being recorded?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, please don't record.
Yeah, I'm making an announcement telling people not to record you.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay.
Hey. You want to do lunch now? I guess that's
Yeah.
We're just here.
Okay. Hey. Kurt, could you turn up the center knob to the center microphone that's currently at zero, up to about 8? Yeah, up to about 8. Due to missing speakers. Oh, fuck. Okay. And you didn't want it to be recorded, audio, video, this whole thing?
I don't care about audio. Video I care about.
You don't want any of it recorded? Okay. We have a request by the speakers that no one record this with video. Audio is okay, no video, no pictures. Okay, so if you see anybody doing that, just destroy the cameras and be gleeful.
I didn't want to talk to you, I didn't know, and we don't want to be pictures.
Sure, whatever.
So my name is Judy Clark. I'm on the board of directors for CPSR. And what is CPSR, you may be asking, so I'll tell you. CPSR stands for Computer Professionals for Social Responsibility. Now you may ask yourself, me, a computer professional? Well, let me just say that if you can find the on switch faster than your boss, you're a computer professional. If you can make an edit faster than your boss, you're a computer professional. If you can hack code around anybody that you know, that you're a computer professional. So this applies to this entire conference. You qualify as computer professionals. And if anybody questions you, I gave you permission to be computer professionals.
Yeah, you're a computer
professional. Right. So CPSR is a membership-based organization. For the most part, we're concerned with changing technology and how technology affects society. Because after all, changing technology does affect society in big ways. We're a very active organization in that we're small and compact, but we have a lot of shit kickers, so we really get a lot of work done. A lot of it's in public education. We hold a lot of meetings. We do a lot of talking. We talk to the press and tell them, you know, like, what's an internet and what's an email. We do a number of different kinds of educational things on both technological levels, technical levels, and also, like, your real basic level. Why would you care about who we are? Well, because you're part of us. You guys all know things. You know a lot of different kinds of things. Um, I have a request. Would any of the conversations happening in the back of the room please move back to the halls or somewhere else so we can get this talk taken care of? A lot of good that did. Okay, so why would you care? Well, you're the active food of what we do. You guys all know things, and you work with the technology, and you obviously know some things that everybody of us doesn't, because, you know, we're different kinds of computer professionals in all different fields. Some of us are researchers, some of us are programmers, some of us are hackers, some of us are activists. For instance, me, I'm an educator. That means I hold a lot of meetings and organize stuff and, like, get other people that know shit to talk about those things to people that don't know shit. So that worked out fine because a lot of people want to know. So why would you care about being part of this group? Well, it's because you know things and you can help us make things happen. We typically make a lot of statements about why things work and don't work, and we help make things... I think someone, like, grabbed the... I'm about to get feedback. We help make things happen by doing critical analysis of what some of the technology is all about. So when, for instance, we see that that a lot of you guys are getting busted and there's no laws, we encourage people to, like, help us develop equitable laws. Hey, Eli, can you grab our light level on getting feedback on this one? Can you get somebody to? Okay, so... Sorry for the technical things, you know, this gets out of hand sometimes. So, okay, Eli's going to make a quick announcement.
Can I please request that anyone not participating in this up here leave the room because of noise levels so everything can be heard? So if you want to listen to the panel, that's great, and participate, wonderful. And if you're not interested in doing so, please take the discussions elsewhere. I thank you for your cooperation.
Okay, so then back to this, so then why do we care what's going on? Well, there's a lot of things typically, that's great, thanks, that's in the public debate. Like, you know, you've all heard about the national information superhighway, and you've all heard, like, all the promise of the cable TVs that are now going to bring us 500 movie channels, and you've heard, like, the shopping networks that are going to give us interactive shopping. You know that it's all, like, happening at us. It's not happening with us or to us. It's going to happen to us because, of course, you know there's no laws to stop it. And you know that, of course, everybody's interested in, like, shoveling it into our faces. Well, that's not necessarily what we want to see. And, I mean, you probably each have your own vision of what the world should really be like, and it's not like what it's going to turn out, and you know that. So I would encourage you all to, like, get interactive, work with us or work with somebody, do meetings, do something, get off your bus, you know, at least once, and send us some information or work with us or do something. It's pretty much open-ended, whatever you feel comfortable doing. So why do I care? Okay, well, one of the reasons this national information infrastructure is a big issue is because there's a lot of things not in the public debate right now. There's a lot of issues not being talked about. We did a paper recently. I have a couple of copies if anybody's interested. We usually sell them, but of course I have a couple free. And of course I didn't bring one up. It's called Serving the Community, the Public Interest Vision of the National Information Infrastructure. And it talks about some of the things that's not in the public debate, like universal access. Of course, phone companies won't talk about this because they haven't achieved it yet. And because they're a monopoly, they don't want to really bring this to the fore because, you know, cable TV, which is not a monopoly, has got better universal access than the public telephone system. They're not talking about what's the default setting going to look like. Like, they're not saying, what's in this for me? Like, what's Joe America? What's Joe Sixpack going to go to the information superhighway for? To be sold stuff to, you know, 24-hour commercial? I doubt it. So what's going to be the compelling application that's going to bring America into, like, doing the participation with the NII? They're not talking about how it's going to be paid for. Like, who's going to not be able to afford? How are they going to get access anyway? They're not talking about things like, are we going to be encouraged to be publishers? Like, if we have something to say, can we do it, or are we going to get charged for it? They're not saying, like, what the low level of access is going to be like. Do we get a mega space, and how are we going to pay for that? Or is there no storage space in cyberspace? Is this going to be email, and that's it? Is that default? Nobody's saying these things. So we're saying that this should be in the public debate. People should be talking about what this low-level shit should be looking like and help us define and help the politicians define what they want everybody that's funding this stuff to do. What's the default settings going to be? You probably have an idea of what you'd like to see as the default setting. probably a little higher than what Joe Sixpack was going to get, but it's a start, so we should be talking about these things. Okay, on this educational level, too, there's a lot of information that you can get access to. For instance, CPSI is one of those groups that you can probably call up and say, well, okay, I want to file a FOIA, so what do you do? Okay, well, there's an interesting thing. It's fairly easy until you start spending money. There's a form that you fill out, you get it notarized, you send it into the government, and then you keep track of time as it goes by, and then, of course, when they don't answer, you have to send them a letter saying you didn't answer, and now I'm going to sue you about it. And then the government responds, and then you inquire of the services of a lawyer, and you say, okay, now the lawyer's going to sue your boss, and then the government answers you. It doesn't always have to cost lawyers. Sometimes the government actually responds. Pretty straightforward. Also, some of you actually have credit histories by now, and you can get access to that information. I have addresses for TRW, TransUnion, and for Equifax. You can just write in a letter and say, tell me everything. And also your medical information. You know, right now, the post office is one of the people that's putting together this policy saying, we want a national identification card, and we're going to put your social security number on it, and we're going to put together your banking history on it, and we're going to put your medical information, because, of course, you know, this medical thing, this idea that the president's got is going to give everybody medical care. Well, of course, they've all got social security numbers, so why don't we just track it all in one card? And then this will be such an easy system to deal with that in the future, we won't need to file tax returns because, hey, we already know how much you make. We're tracking your bank account. You won't have to file forms. Okay, so, well, on another unrelated note, of course, I want to tell you a little about ethics, and this is a sense of community. One of the things that this panel is going to talk about is developing a sense of community. We are really a community in cyberspace, and one of the big functions of conferences like this that Jeff probably doesn't get much recognition for is that he's helping to solidify, to make a family out of this community, to make something like realistic. Because in cyberspace, there's a lot of possibility for escape, but he's really bringing it to like our own person. He's bringing it back to a human element. So I'm going to talk a little about ethics, which sort of is the field that falls between what the actual laws are that are written down that the police insist that we follow, and the actual laws that govern our lives, which is like if you kill somebody, then they're dead, and that person ceases to exist. So there's like a big gray area about what you do, what your behavior looks like between this area. And there's a lot of people making judgments about this. And again, I'd encourage you, if you have some strong disagreements or agreements with this, push forward some of these ideas and, like, you know, help to make this an understandable thing. These are like rules to live by. So there's three different things I'm going to go really quickly through. These three things are three sets of guidelines. And they're much more extensive than what I'm going to tell you. I'm basically going to gloss over them. But there's one that's taped on the wall back there. The IAB strongly endorses the view of, this is like an advisory panel, and this is funded by the National Science Foundation, who is, of course, looking out for your best interests. Their Division of Network Communications Research and Infrastructure put together a set of ethics guidelines, and they basically say that it's unethical and unacceptable to do activity which purposely seeks to gain unauthorized access to the resources of the Internet, disrupts the intended use of the Internet, wastes resources, which includes people, capacity, and computer resources through such actions, destroys the integrity of computer-based information, whether it's to change words and then say it's the original or, you know, some other more devious way, and also compromises the privacy of users. Now, that last one is especially important to me. So this one was done, like, in 1989. So these people were already starting to think of the rules that are governing the community that we're living in. Okay, the second one, ACM, which is the largest computer organization in the world, to my knowledge, they set up these general moral imperatives. And these moral imperatives say, as ACM members, we are going to do these behaviors. And some of those behaviors include they're going to contribute to society and human well-being by being an ACM member and by the work that they do. They're going to avoid harm to others. They're going to be honest and trustworthy. They're going to, and this is like to each other, you know, this is like me to my friends, and you are in a sense some of my friends. I don't know you yet, so, you know, it doesn't matter if you know me. But still, I'm going to be honest because you're part of the community that I'm trying to develop too. I'm going to be fair and take action not to discriminate. I'm going to honor property rights, including copyrights and patents. Because, you know, if I write a piece of software, I don't want people to pay me for it, you know, so there's like, I have a fine line between where I pirate software and where I don't. And if it's stuff that I really want to support, I pay for it. But stuff I don't use very much, I'm just testing, of course, and I borrow a patent for a few days. And give proper credit for intellectual property. It's like when you take somebody else's words, give them credit for having said it. You know, if you would want the same thing, so do the same thing to others, and that helps to strengthen the bonds of cyberspace, if you will. Respect the privacy of others. Don't go like, you know, dissing somebody or out to somebody on the net just because you don't like them. You know, don't put their like phone number on the net because they're going to get diluted with phone calls from a bunch of wackos, and that might not be fair. In a lot of different ways. And honor confidentiality. If somebody's giving you a secret, you know, don't like spread it all over the net, and don't like find your way into somebody else's mailbox and then spread that all over the net. That's unethical too. Then there's one more thing that's a little bit more current. There's a group called the Computer Ethics Institute, which is in Washington, D.C., and they put forth the Ten Commandments. So I'm going to give you these Ten Commandments, and then I'm going to help help you understand some of the different aspects of being a network community by having some of these other panelists talk, and I'll introduce those to them to you in a minute. Computer Ethics Institute has Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not use a computer to harm other people. Thou shalt not interfere with other people's computer work. Thou shalt not snoop around in other people's computer files. Thou shalt not use a computer to steal. Thou shalt not use a computer to bear false witness. Thou shalt not copy or use proprietary software for which you have not paid. Thou shalt not use other people's computer resources without authorization or proper compensation. Thou shalt not appropriate other people's intellectual output. You can kind of see there's like some concerns here that keep getting voiced. Thou shalt think about the social consequences of the programs you're writing or the systems you're designing. And thou shalt always use a computer in ways that ensure consideration and respect for your fellow human beings. Again, we're setting this up. If we became really unethical and started to become a bunch of jerks on the net, you can bet that there's going to be laws telling us what our ethics are going to be, and then it becomes less a matter of ethics but a matter of laws. And I would suggest to you that it's pretty much an open-ended thing. We can set up our own environment now, and the more we're jerks, the more we're going to get laws. The more we show respect, the better it is for people that are going to learn from us, these jokes that are getting on the net now, that don't have a clue yet. They're going to have to learn from somebody. So if we're setting good examples, there, of course, not going to have to be any laws because we'll have a cool environment in which to keep interacting. Okay, now I want to introduce the people that are up here because they all represent CPSR, which is a pretty multifaceted group. We're sort of loose cannons in CPSR because a lot of us don't have the same income level that a lot of other CPSR members do. By the way, there's these really cool yellow things back there. If you want it to be a membership, if any of you claim to be a student at the $20 membership level, I hesitate to say that we'll never check on that. And it's support, and after all, you know, support. But there are different levels of CPSR, so I'm going to introduce three different levels of CPSR here. To my left, your right, is Mara Whitney, who represents Chicago, the Chicago end of CPSR and Lucid Communities. On this side, to the near of me, is Karen Coyle, who is CPSR Berkeley. She's the chair for CPSR Berkeley, a librarian of note, and works in the university library system. And just on the other side is Marianne, who doesn't speak for Sun, but who works at Sun. And who's she's more of a, doesn't run CPSR, but actually does a lot of the work of CPSR, which is a valid support, and not coincidentally has been a supporter for years and years and years. So I'm going to...
Who wants to go first, by the way?
You want?
Yeah.
Okay, so Mara's going to go first.
I want to talk about community. I've been concerned with community recently in several areas, one of which is Native American community, and also, coincidentally, I get to watch Community on the Net in the Native American Community on the Net. And I've noticed, not just frequently, in general, we all have a great need for community and a sense of our place in community. And technology has been incredibly disruptive of that. Initially, hundreds of years ago, people grew up in a place that their ancestors had grown up, and they probably never left more than a few miles from home. And you grew up in a place that whatever you did, you'd have to live with for the rest of your life. So certain mores governed you that perhaps don't govern us anymore. Well, with the industrial age and people moving into cities, community got disrupted. You had the car, now people could move away. They could live far from where they worked or far from where their parents lived. You have a phone, so you don't have to see people face to face. We have TV, which keeps us connected to community outside of our own physical community. And now we have the net, which gives us a cyberspace community. The good part of all of this is that we get freedom, we get choice, we can recreate ourselves, we can become an individual. And that has become very, very important to us, and we act as individuals. The bad part of this is that all of this has been disruptive of community. There's a real hunger for community. And if you haven't noticed it on the net, you might you subscribe to a mail list and you think you're going to get information and you have one-liners of, hi, I'm going off to lunch, I'll drop you a note when I get back, and your mailbox gets flooded by all these people who are lonely and want someone to talk to and want to feel connected, and they don't. And so the net offers what could be at times called an illusion of community. There's a gentleman here who has a virtual coffee house, and I'm interested in it, and I think it's a good idea, but if you have a virtual coffee house, then perhaps you don't have to go into a physical coffee house. Perhaps you don't have to go and meet people face-to-face and talk to people and have all those discomforts that come with being with people. You have a community that becomes disposable. You don't like your community, but you pick up and you recreate it. Back to the Native American time, before I started to get involved with Native Americans, I was involved with what they call the wannabes, which are people who absorb some of the Native American traditions. They run their sweats, they carry pipes. And Native Americans are very upset about that. And they're upset because the wannabes can take off and they decide, well, I don't like this game anymore, and they can leave. Native Americans are going to be back in their actual physical community and they have to live with it. So part of this wannabe is disposable. If you don't like your community, great. You can blow it off, change it, move physically away, take on new threads, and be something else somewhere else, someplace else. Now the other side of the of community on the net is by, you can do this in the privacy of your own home, and I was joking with some of us that in a little while we'll never need to travel. We won't even need to furnish our house, and we can live in a little hole someplace because we can go into our virtual community and we can be in Versailles, or we can be on Maui outdoors in beautiful weather or whatever. So we will lose possibly the need to go out and make the community real physically. We will no longer have a need to deal with family, deal with lovers, deal with friends, neighbors, etc. And that will be an incredible loss, and going with that is the sense of loss that we will feel. Now the good out of all of that is that we have the potential to build a cyberspace community. And some of the people here, like I ran into Mark today, we've had a net relationship. So I have a friend that I meet physically for the first time. I met Judy and we other women at a conference, and we've strengthened our relationships with cyberspace, and we can physically meet and keep connectivity in relationships that we couldn't because of the distance involved. And just some of the wonderful potential that will come out of the community. And for me, perhaps the best potential that will come out is when we think of the slogan, think globally, act locally, is that we now have a chance to take some of the things that we have accessible to us now from the net and bring it into our physical community. And here again, when I look at the Native American community, I was initially very surprised that so many Native American communities, where there are very high poverty levels and there's not necessarily high employment, they have active bulletin boards, they have active communication with other communities throughout the country. Something like Chiapas, I don't know, would have happened if we hadn't had the net. That the media is reasonably censored and not enough people who read papers or watch television would not be caring a great deal for the day-to-day blow-by-blow events that happen in Chiapas. And the same is true of what's going on in the Native American community. Now you can get detailed information of Exxon trying to build a copper mine in Mole Lake, Wisconsin, and you can send that through to all other communities throughout the world, and you can get people to respond. So there's a great amount of power that's going to be available out of the net, a great amount of connectivity, and it depends on our ability to take all of this and not use the net as a place of illusion and dreams and escapism, but to take the resources and take it into our physical communities and use it for action.
Thanks, Mara. I think it's important to point out that a lot of you have a good sense of balance in reality, because you actually came here to meet a lot of people that you're dealing with, that there's promise in the people that actually made it here, because you're showing a good sign, at least to us, that you're taking your world seriously and that you care about the environment that you're finding important. So I'll pass this on. Thank you. Okay, now this side of the table, we're going to do a little style shift. Okay, so here it is. This is my top 10 list of things that you can do for the net. Number 9, adopt a newbie. Yes, it's a pain, yeah, but every newbie who learns the ways of the net is a netizen who isn't posting to the wrong end of the listserv, and it makes life better for all of us. Number 8, encourage a kid. Have you ever watched an 8 or 10-year-old kid get online? They get it right away. But a lot of kids don't have an adult, either a parent or a teacher, who can help them get online. So you do it, and then that kid, in turn, can teach the adults in their lives. Number 7, get your mother on email. If your mother is already on email, get your grandmother on email. She'll love the idea that she can reach you instantly, anywhere, anytime. Number 6, help a journalist. You have read those horribly misguided articles about the space, right? Well, don't just blame the journalists. They're usually well-meaning people on impossible deadlines with editors from hell. Find a willing journalist, offer your time and information, show them how to use the net, how to contact people, and how to get the information that they need to get it right. Number 5, give your knowledge away free. Schools, libraries, nonprofit organizations, they all need your knowledge of the net, and they have no money, and they don't have the technical expertise to do it for themselves. Volunteer on your own or form groups like CompuMentor, which is a group that provides technical help to nonprofits. Who would you rather see get online, the tobacco companies or Planned Parenthood, Time Warner or your public library? Number 4, learn a second language. And I don't mean C++. I mean a human language. There's all this talk about the net being global, but guess what? It's overwhelmingly dominated by the U.S. and by our language and culture. Global shouldn't mean that everyone else in the world has to learn to speak English to get on. Number 3, be all you can be. Be out online. Are you completely normal? I mean, are you the online norm? Or are you maybe younger than 16 or over 40, operating without a Y chromosome? Golden brown, having sex for other than reproductive purposes. Whatever it is, hey, it's neat to have a catchy handle, but let's let the space have a variety of real life. Number 2, respect other people's bandwidth. You might be one of those lucky people who has free or a nearly free ride on the net. But remember that other folks are paying, and they're paying to receive what you write to send. Next time, before you hit the send key, think, would I pay 25 cents to read this? Number 1, use your local library. Forget about the national information infrastructure that Al Gore just invented it one day on the golf course. We've got an NII, and it's in our libraries. There's a lot of stuff in libraries that you wouldn't believe, stuff that you can't get online. And the real information highway will be when we combine the power of the libraries with the space, and we need people who know them both to help get them together. And number 0, the top thing you can do, join something. Join EFF, join CPSR. Give a few bucks to the people who fight the battles in Washington against the forces of evil and incompetence, and maybe I should add stupidity. Lend your name to a group of clouds. We need you, they need you, numbers do count. We must be present to win. Okay, well, let's see. Hacker Barbie. What happened was, I think 35 years ago, Well, it was 1959, actually. It was a cartoon in France. And Mattel ripped it off and made a Barbie doll. And most people didn't believe that little girls would want a doll of a grown-up woman. They just thought girls wanted baby dolls. But it was really popular. So Barbie, we all now know what Barbie is. And I've been, like, on the net since the early 80s. And number of PPSR since I'm 84. I've been working in a club of the world for 7 years or so. And I'm a programmer, and mostly I find myself in meetings with 20 guys, and I'm a chick and whatnot. And you know, if you're in a meeting like that and you're not the chick, think about what it would feel like, you know. Hold back on the jokes. And so, and I just thought it'd be fun to say that, you know, a lot of guys, there's two types of women on the net. Either they live inside those gift images, or they're like these really, really dumb secretaries who can't figure out how to set their environment variable. You know, so I just want to say there's a lot of women out there, and we want to form our own community. We want it to be maybe a little bit more evolved than the not the great state of affairs between men and women in the world at large. So that's like the background of Dr. Barbara Bruceley. And what happened was last year, a guy got a message from Mattel asking, "What's your favorite Barbie?" And I loved his answer. And he's really the guy who gets the credit for the Hacker Barbie. He's Kurt Hamer from Harvard Law School, and he sent this to all Cobra computers. Speaking for myself, my niece can't get enough of the Hacker Barbie green basement apartment. The pink sun work station in the corner. The little containers of paper such lumps scattered across the floor. Don't blame me, I wrote a libertarian teacher. It's on every little girl, excellent. And so on and so forth. Now, what I loved about that was that it was a really great image for women, and I identified with it immediately too, because I had a sun work station in my basement apartment and take out their plumbing work. So I immediately identified with it. And in true form on the net, this was immediately ripped off, and somebody sent out a bogus press announcement from Mattel, which really twisted what that guy said and turned it from being a really positive image of women hacking the net to another real kind of put down image. So I wanted to say, let's resurrect the Hacker Barbie image, and there's now the Hacker Barbie webpage. And you're all invited to come by and drop in and visit, and it's going to be like an interactive webpage. And particularly women, I'd like to encourage them, I'll send the address. Particularly women, I'd like to encourage them to help me furnish the place. And right now it's on Netcom, and as soon as I remember my password on Network Wizards, it'll be on nw.com. So the real address will be http://nw.com. Yeah, I'll just put it up. And because I would hate to, you know, get in the way of anyone's copyrighted trademark, Barbie actually spells the name B-A-R-B-E. There's no I in it. So Barbie's coming out of the box. she's online. She wants to invite you to drop by. And since I still have the form, she was listening to some of the stuff that was being said earlier today. And you know, one thing that really bugged her was this whole idea of the net as this place that's really fearful and scary, and there's problems, and oh my goodness. And I'm really, really tired of that argument, but she is too. And it reminds me of the argument that without being facetious, and I hate dropping words like tactics, but the argument that was going on in the 30s, you know, there's a need for a lot of social control. And I think the need for protecting our civil liberties is greater than the need for trying to help find kidnappers and so on. Because for every anecdote you want to tell about some crime investigation being thwarted, I'll tell you an anecdote. Things that had happened to me or friends of mine where a law enforcement was not on our side. My car broke down once in Oregon, and this big, fat, little nice-looking cop threw me in the hands of a guy out in the middle of nowhere in the country who was packing a gun, and I got away because I like to think I can talk to him. But, the police are mostly human, and I think like 10% of them, you know, might not be my friend. So I'd rather think they're my friend, but I don't want to, like, have it be the de facto thing. So, but what's all right. That's a hack of writing. So, I guess I'd just like to close and say, you know, drop on by and remember that there's all kinds of women on the net, and I'd like to really encourage all the women to be real active on the net and don't let the boring stereotypes take over. Okay. Questions? Oh, I'm sorry, Emily. I'm an asshole. All these years typing. It's MRM, which is my email. If it's not going to be email, it's MRM@net.
Is that HTML?
It's VARDE.HTML. Right. So, sorry about that. And the NW.com is a company called Network Wizards that may or may not be going into the business of publishing web pages. So if that happens and you want a place to publish a web page, that might be a good company to get in contact with. I know the service isn't online yet. I don't want to pre-announce it, but keep in mind.
And for those of you who do have web access, that high bandwidth kind of a thing, we have a low bandwidth web page. No graphics to speak of because we're on a 14-port dial-up flip, but if you're interested in checking out any of the 65 pages at CPSR, 50 of them actually have meaningful things, 5 still under construction. It's http://www.cpsr.org/home. So you can go home, check us out. Any questions? Cool, lunchtime.
Cool.
What do we have
next?
Nothing till
lunch.
Yeah, but I mean, who do we have after lunch?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't bring a thing.
Yeah. Hey, who do we have
after
lunch?
Do you want me to know?
Well, I mean, I have my
sorry.
Program. I thought it was a
cool
program.
I only keep tracking myself. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I'm going to have to track them all. So we have a whole new group to talk about any three of the special interest groups, Bay and Bailey, doing technical support together. CPSR is a pretty wide range.
Yeah, we aren't animated.